Only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Trying to make a scene, but is it still a scene? If it's not heard a scene, don't worry about us, nigga, worry about your team. Trying to get this cream, cause they say cash rules. And you know all the Parker's beats and cashews. Ain't nothing but a thing, put bass in your put bass in your voice if you gon' speak my name. Damn near 30, grown ass nigga, we a dynasty. Word to Jigga, rockin' and I'm rollin', drive it like it's stolen. No sin calls, bruh, always goin', still bumpin' Jill, nigga, life is golden.
Yo, how many drinks will make that? Yo, when you can hear a nigga lurking on the street, my nigga like, boom, boom, boom. I'm working on my third, you see, and you still learn about the birds and the bees, my nigga, you. We be up all night just murdering beats, and had the landlord knocking like a burglary. Like, boom, boom, boom. They pump a nigga around the world, you see, and tell me what you motherfuckers ever heard of me, tell me like.
See me, I ain't fucking with none of that chit chat that he say, she say shit about this cat that. Well, I heard that he had nigga just get back that old white nigga saying, see, I don't do the rap thing, but I can actually understand you, I dig that. And you ain't talking about all the guns and you flip crack. Well, listen up, Baxter, well, see, I get that, but we won't agree on as much as you think, Jack. And then we got the old heads going, what's up with the ghostwriting thing, my nigga, I don't get that. See, back in my day, you had to write and spit raps. Isn't Ice Cube writing 6-4 a known fact? They even put it in the movie, nigga, explain that. That's no shade, they didn't even try going change that. And here we go back again with all that chit-chat that he say, she say, nigga, just spit raps.
How many drinks will make that? Yo, when you can hear a nigga lurking on the street, my nigga like, boom, boom, boom. I'm working on my third, you see, and you still learn about the birds and the bees, my nigga, you. We be up all night just murdering beats, and had the landlord knocking like a burglary. Like, boom, boom, boom. They pump a nigga around the world, you see, and tell me what you motherfuckers ever heard of me, tell me like, boom, boom.
You hear it off the beaten path here on 101.9 CITR. You're listening to Injury Reserve Boom times 3. We played them here 2 weeks in a row because, you know, after last week I never heard them, but they're coming out with some fire music. I think last week we played Drive It Like It's Stolen, and that song is hot. And then now we got Boom, 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 and that song is hot. So, if you haven't listened to the show before, I'm your host, Issa Arian. We are broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory here from UBC's campus. The show is off the beaten path. And for the next hour, I'll be taking you down my path. Today we have like a pretty well-planned show. Like, it's a lot of the times it's as if, you know, like I'm walking through the jungle with the machete, and we just, you know, end up where we end up. But today, it's pretty defined. We'll be talking a little bit about some, you know, some pot laws, weed laws here in Vancouver, because, you know, as everyone is looking forward to a short 8 months from now, marijuana will be legalized federally here in Vancouver, well, in Canada. And so, you know, with that comes regulations. We'll be talking about Las Vegas and how come these gun laws never, ever, ever seem to change. We will be talking to a director from the Vancouver International Film Festival, Corey Bowles. You might know him from Trailer Park Boys or some of his other projects. And that'd be pretty interesting because we haven't had an interview here in a long time. And if we are so lucky, we might get Otis to call in. Now, you guys don't know Otis, but if you're my friends, you might. Because I've been screenshotting his Facebook post and sharing it. Because on some days, I like to, like, let's just say this. If there's levels of trolling, I like to think of myself as, like, I'm not a, let's just say, like, I'm like a blue belt. So, like, if you know of Taekwondo, you know, it goes blue belt, then red belt, then black belt, and below blue belt is green belt. And then the yellow belt, then white belt. And I feel like, you know, like I've got some red stripes, but definitely I'm a blue belt. Like there's people who are definitely better trolls. But I feel like my troll game is pretty good. Anyways, we might have tricked him into calling in. He's probably listening. I hope he's scared because nobody wants to be embarrassed, you know, like intellectually outmatched on national radio, you know, that is streamed in 172 countries. Yeah, they listen to Off the Beaten Path everywhere. And I feel like I can say that because there's no way you can prove me wrong. And if you can, call in at 604-822-2487. That's 604-822-CITR. 604-UBC-CITR. And you tell me how you can prove that they're not listening to this show in Zambia, Zambia, or which country did Trump make up last week? So let's just get right in. You know how we like to start off with the weather, because it's like an easy way to get in here in BC. Today is supposed to be very nice. It's been nice all week. So last week, you know, I was complaining about how, you know, it's fall and it's just perpetually cloudy and rainy for the next, 5 or 6 months. But this week, we've actually been very, very, very blessed to have such great weather. This is why, you know, like I told you guys, I don't believe in weather forecasts more than like 3 days out. And I don't look at the weather forecast on the same day either. So, like, my weather forecast is really the tomorrow and the next day. And then I'll take a look at the Farmer's Almanac because I don't understand how a book that was printed like on January 1st, let's just assume that the latest The Farmer's Almanac could be printed was on January 1st. Like, how can that book be more accurate than the internet? Like, how can anything be more accurate than the internet? And I feel like that is a question that we should be asking a lot because, you know, as people nowadays read more on the internet than they do in real life, people should be wondering why books have been and seemingly will continue to be so much more correct. Well, with that being said, so today it'd be sunny. Tomorrow will be showers with a 60% chance of precipitation. Throughout the weekend, it'll be mostly sunny. And then next week, it's not rainy, but it's just cloudy. So that's not looking too good. We're going to get right into the BC news. I don't really have really much introduction to talk about today. Besides, So there has been a consensus on the taxes. So, you know, here in BC, there's really three things that we talk about. Like, I talk about this every week, but I feel like for new listeners, you have to let them know, like, BC is a pretty chill place. What people talk about here is housing, like homelessness and foreign buyers driving up the real estate market. And they talk about weed reform, pot reform, cannabis reform. And that's pretty much it. With some other news like sprinkled in, like a little bit about, like, you know, drugs that are going on here, you know, fentanyl and overdoses and things. But those things are, you know, like, are typically linked to homelessness and public safety. So, but right now we're going to be talking a little about pot. So in Canada, the Canadian government plans to make marijuana legal by January 1st, 2018. And so if you don't know what January 1st is, that's Canada Day. I don't even know if that's like Canadian Independence Day. Like, I don't know if Canada has an Independence Day because the Queen is, Queen Elizabeth is still on the money. So, like, I don't know how you can be independent yet still, you know, have your monarch on the money. But on Canada Day, they plan on making it a legalizing marijuana. And so what federally they want to do is put a 10% tax on top of the provincial and federal taxes that you'll already have to pay for sales tax. And while some people feel like the largest Canadian pot growers feel like this is a great idea, or this is acceptable because it's not too harsh, there are some critics, particularly the ones who have been influenced by the United States legalization, because they know that you know, having too large of a tax and having the prices just even a little too high will continue to keep the black market of marijuana thriving, which I actually didn't know. But in Colorado, there's still a huge black market of marijuana that's not involved in shipping it to other states, but in Colorado. And while, and like, I feel like this just comes from, like, the people making laws that just don't understand, you know, they don't understand weed. Or maybe the drug dealers are just getting more sophisticated, like they're taking Square or maybe Cash App. I know some drug dealers who I know have done that before. They Cash App or Venmo or some, you know, other ways to complete, you know, this electronic payments. But as the government, like, last year when they said that it would be legal by July 1st, 2018, I've kind of rolled my eyes because I really felt that Trudeau, when I first moved here in 2015, he had talked about legalizing marijuana, like, immediately. And so that was one of the big things he ran on. But as it was clear in his campaign or in his, you know, in his trail, in his dealings, that he wasn't as serious or as now, I wouldn't say as serious, but he just didn't continue with, and, you know, on his plan, like everyone thought. So everyone thought pretty much by 2016, at least 2017, that at least it would be more, less criminalized and, you know, had a clearer path to being legalized. But clearly, he did have a path. You know, clearly he did have a plan. And so, you know, as we get comfortable with the taxes and get comfortable with paying, you know, upwards of $10 a gram here, which I still feel is, like, pretty expensive, considering the fact that when I first moved here, marijuana was only $6 a gram, and now it's moved up to 10. Like, I've never bought marijuana in the black market here in Vancouver because weed was so cheap and it's just so readily accessible. Like, this, I moved, you know, in Kitsilano, and there's literally, I can see, like, four dispensaries from my doorstep. So you really have this, like, options of just, like, you know, what are the type of people? What's the type of environment that I want to go and buy weed from? And they're pretty much all the same. But, yeah, so, like, it's, I feel like they just underestimate, you know, what exactly goes into this economy. Moving on to housing. So here we have one thing that has been a real issue here in housing, and particularly in pushing housing prices up. It doesn't really bother you if you own a home, but if you don't own a home, or you want to own a home, or you want to rent a home, these foreign buyers have been making our real estate prices here way more expensive and overpriced. And so what one thing they did do last year was excise a foreign buyer tax, which really tried to level the playing field making it a little more expensive for people to make foreign investments here in real estate market, causing the prices to go up, because typically they don't even occupy the residencies. They just really just let them, they just buy them sort of and hold them. It's like a big bond, like a big physical space bond. And so the province here, a developer has come up with a program that is rent to own. And so what that does is it gives the home buyer 5 years to get a visa or get permanent residency or something in that nature. And the province has okayed, this way as a way to skirt the developers having to pay a foreign buyer tax. Now, I think these are the types of things that people need to pay attention to. So, while as a province, we have decided that this is an issue, foreign buyers is an issue, and that needs to be resolved if you want to keep particularly young people and people who, are just not uber wealthy, and want to own a home and want to raise a family here in Lower Mainland in Vancouver. You got to know that the developers are always, always, always trying to find a way around the things that you're working towards. So when we put a foreign buyer tax, you have to understand that the next day developers went into researching about how that they could devise a scheme, that could get around that to, so that they can continue to make more and more and more money, because that's how capitalism works. It's always about how can they make more and more money. When the rules come, there's just another, it's another scheme to be built. And so this is the latest. And so it'll be interesting to see what's the next, what's the next remedy, and how do we continue to, stay on top of these and stay in front of, stay in front of these schemes so that people can continue to live, happy and prosperous and fulfilled lives here in Vancouver. When we get back, we'll be talking a little bit about how a Kelowna lawyer wrote himself into a will and stole money from a man, and maybe potentially will be facing some charges that I don't think that dude is ready for. Stay tuned.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Vancouver International Film Festival is back this fall from September 28th to October 13th.
Experience some of the best cinema from around the world fused with related creator talks and events at one of North America's largest film festivals. With more than 300 films from 73 countries, VIFF's program includes the pick of top international film festivals as well as many undiscovered gems from around Canada and the world. This year, be sure to catch CITR's sponsored film, Tattoos, a poignant coming-of-age romance between two punk music connoisseurs, screening September 30th and October 1st. For more information and tickets, visit viff.org. Hey.
Yo, we out here. Yo, we out here. Yo, we out here. Young, underrated, black, and we troublesome. Ain't no limits, we bout and bout. And no, you ain't one of us. Seeking until I suffer some. Get the cake and we double up. Pokies popping, we run it up. They quick to pull the gun on you, it's wild. Couldn't walk in my shoes or run a mile. And niggas trigger happy. Ain't shit funny, nobody smiling. You be lucky to make it out this motherfucker alive. What? When me and my niggas cry, we letting everybody know that we out here. Young, underrated, black, and we troublesome. Police ain't gonna be the only people you niggas running from. It's wild here. Gotta take yours if you want it done. Around here, we put in work and grind it till the sun is up. We out here. What? We out here. We out here. I watched my nigga take a L. He was wishing to die. Gotta know how it feels to lose, to be a winner sometimes. Mob deep with them niggas, young prodigies causing havoc. When they get something, they flash it. Cause in the past, they never had it. Imagine back in the day when there was places that we couldn't pass. And now we blacking after anything they said we couldn't have. See, we ain't holding back, so I suggest you keep your feelings tough. What? You whack niggas left the game on ease, and we gon' fill it up. We out here. Young, underrated, black, and we troublesome. Police ain't gon' be the only people you niggas running from. It's wild here. Gotta take yours if you want it done. Around here, we put in work and grind it till the sun is up. We out here. What? We out here. We out here. What?
Thinking back when I was a youngin', turned a dollar to a hundred. The money was the motive, nigga, that's how it is now. Who do you call when you down and the struggle is real? Papa was hustling to get to that meal, and that's who I do it for. Them early mornings, niggas owning, we gotta eat. We starving out in these streets, more bodies between the sheets. My homies is getting killed, cops is begging they steal. I'm praying it's not my brother, ain't heard about it in weeks.
So put the bullshit to the side, all we wanna do is ride. Banging my own shit while cruising on the west side. They know when I'm on the move, when I slide. Cause you can feel the bass in your home when the smoke pass by. Yo, so what you saying, my nigga? Peek the bigger picture. I'm hating, no more waiting, my nigga. Either you crimping or you blaming, my nigga. Or not affiliated, as long as you grinding out to make it, my nigga. We out here.
Young, underrated, black, and we troublesome. Police ain't gonna be the only people you niggas running from. It's wild here. You gotta take yours if you want it done. Around here, we put in work and grind it till the sun is up. We out here. What? We out here. What? We out here. We out here. They asking for the we cooking with the recipe. We got the recipe. Hey, they want the recipe. They asking for the recipe. They see us cooking with the recipe. We got the recipe.
Rosemary in my throat from the chicken last night. We ate it, then we smoked. It was in the oven, it was roasting. You always wanna fuck, but you never let me host it. I ran out of my patience. I might become a patient. I'm a race car without no lane. Condoleezza with the cape, blowing Hillary out.
You're back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9. I'm your host, Issa Arian. We're here broadcasting from UBC's campus. If you'd like to call in, the number is 604-822-CITR. That's 604-UBC-CITR. You're just listening to Terror Jr. and Useless. And before that, the Villain Park with We Out Here. So before the break, I said I was going to talk about this. So a lawyer from Kelowna, he decided there was this man in hospice. And so as he was commissioned to write the man's will, which had like $250,000 in a trust, the man couldn't come up with a charity to donate his money to. So the lawyer decided, you know what, it would be a great idea. You should just, you know, send me over like $150,000. Come on, man. Not only did he say you could send him $150,000, like, I feel like this has got to be common practice in law, because the man is only suspended from his profession for 4 months in order to pay $2,500 in hearing costs. I guess it may be because he returned, you know, the $140,000. That seems like a pretty, you know, I'm going to say like a slap on the wrist. You know, you're just suspended from your job for 4 months, you know, and you have to pay $2,500 because you paid the money back. Yo, I couldn't go to Shoppers or CVS or London Drugs right now, steal something, and then when they catch me, I just say like, okay, you guys got me. Bring it back. You couldn't steal candy, bring it back, and expect not to even get arrested. You know, that you only have to pay court costs. You know, this is sometimes when I feel like these, there are two totally different justice departments when it comes to crimes. Like, I feel like if you're stealing over $100,000, like, you're better off. If you're going to steal, don't like rob a bank, or don't rob people, or, you know, like people maybe with a gun. You know, like, find a way to scheme people out of some money. Where they have potentially have to sign like a contract, or, you know, like paperwork, and maybe wear a suit. You know, get on your James St. Patrick and wear a suit when you rob people. And you know, if you get caught, you can just like tell the officer at RCMP, listen, officer, I didn't really know that I couldn't do that. You know, I didn't, you know, the question around whether this is legal is questionable. So, moving on. So, if you heard the PSA here that we played during the break, it talks about the Vancouver International Film Festival. So, the Vancouver International Film Festival has been going on since last Thursday. And there has been some really great films. You know, I've had the pleasure to see a few of them. Last weekend, I saw Indian Horse, which is a adaptation of Richard Wagamese's book, you know, brought to life by Stephen Campanelli. And I've written a review on it. And you can find it at Discorder Magazine here. You can find it from the CITR website. I will be posting a link to it after the show. The movie is really good. I said in the review, just like, I feel like it's one of those movies that everyone needs to see. It's really about residential schools and like the potential hope that can come from, you know, such a like a tragic beginning, but also a glimpse to how those tragedies, you know, like, sometimes it just feels like there's almost no coming back from some things, but a good story, and it's told really well and it's shot really well, so you should check it out. There's one final showing next Wednesday, I believe it's the 14th, at the Vancouver Playhouse. So check it out and read my review. If you'd like to read anything that I've written, you know, you can ask where you can find some more. Or if you like the show, you can listen to some of the historical podcasts on mixcloud.com/offthebeatenpath, or you can find it on facebook.com/otbp20xx. Or you can find me on Twitter or Instagram at Spoonie_love. Or you can listen to on Tuesdays at Crimes and Treasons, which is a hip-hop show that we play from 8 to 10 now. Our hours are no longer 9 to 11. So if you want to hear the hottest new hip-hop uncensored show, 8 to 10. Let's move on to some of the things that happened over the weekend. So I feel like everyone is pretty aware of the shooting in Vegas, the largest mass shooting in United States history, not counting, not counting like Wounded Knee, or not counting like the Trail of Tears, or not counting, you know, some of the other large massacres that have inflicted death and pain and on other people who are brown or seen as not people. So like when we say the largest mass shooting in history, like we know we are talking about a specific demographic, or not even just a specific demographic, but just like those people were in potentially in the line of fire. So in Vegas, there was a shooter who was in the Mandalay Bay who, on the second day or the third day of this country concert, decided that he was going to shoot hundreds and hundreds of people and kill 59 people. This, is just the line of tragedies here in the United States. Or we're not here in the United States, in Canada, as we look into the United States. It's just, it just continues to happen. Like, I think I saw a quote, because Sandy Hook happened, I think, in 2012. I was working at the bank, and I remember I'm working on the east side of Cleveland. Well, not the east side of Cleveland. I was working in Highland Hills, so it's, like, east of Cleveland. And remember that morning hearing on the news that Sandy Hook, which was an elementary school in, I believe, Connecticut, where 21 children were shot. And someone on the news saying, if this doesn't get us to change the gun laws in America, then nothing will. And I feel like the same thing, I feel like that still rings true 5 years, 5 years later, that if you can't get behind changing the gun laws, particularly around assault rifles, and around assault rifles, or just guns in general, like you can't even change your mindset about whether guns are necessary or they're not necessary, if after 21 children, are killed at school, then why would you think that people would change the gun laws after 59 people were shot at a country music concert? I've seen a lot of the people who I follow, or a lot of my friends, we talk about these types of things, particularly around why we all believe that guns are, like, I've shot a gun. Shooting a gun is fun. Like, shooting a gun is a good time. Like, I even had the target, which I shot at the gun range, hanging up in my room. It's not like, that I'm so against guns, but knowing that people, who have access to these guns, or people who have stockpiled a lot of these guns, I think it's something like 3% of Americans have 75% of the guns, and there's 78% of Americans who don't even own a gun. So when you think about the minority of people who are owning guns, who are really making the decisions on whether a gun is necessary or not, what it really means is that the people with guns really don't give a damn about what the people without guns think. So think about that. The people with guns. Don't care about what people without guns think. And that's pretty much true about anything. I feel like if you were holding a gun, you probably, and you had an intent to use it, you wouldn't care about what people without a gun thought because you have a gun. You have the power. And so, you know, right now, the people with guns continue to have the power, even if there's a mass shooting. What they do is, I've seen it, you know, happen in some of my own circles where people, you know, say, like, well, if some of those people would have been able to have a gun, I'm like, you mean the people running away from the bullets? And it gets turned into, no, what if the people who, you know, were in the other side of the hotel or, the, you know, who are next door in the hotel were able to have a gun? And it just makes no sense because people feel like, I don't think people really understand how guns really work. Like, guns aren't, you know, this isn't Call of Duty. Like, there isn't, you know, a auto assist aim. Like, the reason why people get shot, like innocent bystanders get shot in other areas, is because, listen, guns are hard to shoot. That's why people take practice. That's why guns, shooting a gun is an Olympic sport, because it's difficult. And just the fact that the Second Amendment was written in 1776, you know, nearly 250 years ago. And I couldn't imagine what it would be like to write a gun law or a law that governed weapons in the next 250 years. Like, it would be ridiculous. Imagine trying to predict right now what the gun laws should be in the year 2257. Like, we have access to so much better technology. Not only do we have access to so much better technology, like the idea of having guns in the Second Amendment was so that they could form well regulated militias, and in the event that they thought the government was going to try to oppress them, they could overthrow the government. Well, I feel like there's a newsflash. You know, I feel like it really doesn't matter how many guns you have. The government's always going to have access to more, and not only more guns, but better guns. So, you know, if your idea is to go to war with the government, which it has been for particularly not the group of people who you would think would go to war against the government here in the United States. Like, if you had to pick a group of people who you thought it would be reasonable to go, you know, and take up arms against the government. And then you look at the people who actually do take up arms against the government, you know, like the Clive and Bundy a few weeks ago, who, you know, pointed guns at federal agents because he wanted cattle to graze on his land. You would be shocked. I feel like you would be surprised. And you know, and just like that should make you nervous. Also, I saw a statistic this morning that since 1968, so basically in the past 50 years, like 300,000 more people have died from guns-related homicides or gun-related deaths than all of the wars the United States have had combined. So in 250 years of war, only 1.2 million people have died, but in the last 50 years, 1.5 million people have died from gun-related injuries. And, like, if you can't look at that and see that there's something wrong, I don't really know what to tell you. You might be, you know, as Rex Tillerson says, a moron. When we come back, I'm going to be getting Corey Bowles on the phone. So stay tuned if you would like to listen to a really interesting interview from a really interesting director who has directed a movie called Black Cop that is showing here at the Vancouver International Film Festival.
Hey there. This ad caught your attention. It also caught the attention of the coolest people from Squamish to Bellingham, music fans, students, and members of various cultural communities. If you want your ad to do the same, advertise with CITR and Discorder. If you've got a rad new ad or just something you want to share, whether in print, on air, or online, promote your wares, services, or events with us. Contact us at advertising@citr.ca or call 604-822-4342. Visit citr.ca for rates, information, and packages. This is the end of our ad, and if you're still here, we must be doing something right.
Time to be alive. time to throw life in drive. Cause I'm right here, don't fear it. I take your hand, just don't waste time. Caught you dreaming in the daylight. I'm right here, don't fear me. Cause when the pressure's on and the heat is out, they wanna see you crash, that's just how it is. So drop them dead and send them roses. Show them that you're chosen. Believe in this, Lord.
Back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And so we have director Corey Bowles here, who directed the feature film Black Cop, which is being shown in the Vancouver International Film Festival. Corey, can you hear us? Corey, can you hear?
We're a little bumpy, but I got you. I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, great. Yeah. So thank you for being on the show first and foremost.
Thanks.
Yeah. And so like I like am a fan. And so seeing you, you know, go from acting and directing and, you know, and writing. So like I wanted to know, like, what was your favorite part about, you know, about putting this project together?
Oh, that's a good question. No one's ever actually asked that. I think it was, there were a lot of really rewarding parts, you know, but I think it was when we were actually shooting and then we kind of, felt when we got our rhythm, we did it in over 12 days. So, I think right in the middle, we were really, felt like we were doing something, that we all felt we were doing more for ourselves than just making a piece of cinema. We thought, you know, we're doing something that means a little more to each of us. So I think it was that moment, that actual moment that was my favorite.
Yeah. And so, you know, I saw your bookshelf, you know, on your Instagram. And so, you know, it looks very similar to like the bookshelf in the house that I grew up in and like the one that I keep. Yeah. And so, you know, with a lot of like the very like, you know, conscious and, you know, like a more like, I want to say like an academic, you know, bookshelf and, you know, in understanding like identity. And, you know, when it comes to like a black cop, I feel like the identity is so, you know, complex and nuanced. And so what was it that you were trying to bring out in the movie?
Another good question. Thanks. I guess at first when I was thinking about the movie as, you know, I was really going after the reversal thing. And I sort of wanted to shed a perspective on the sort of overall issue that's happening, or that sort of phenomenon of black and the black community, or at least in the black community. But I think it was important for me that if I was going to tackle a black police officer, that it was important to understand on top of, you know, whatever character need for revenge was there, it was really important to capture the struggle and the issue that this person is going through, whether it be being called a traitor in the community or having expectations from peers while being seen as something different by peers. And I realized, you know, my own ideas and my own perceptions of police officers. I have two cousins that are police officers, and, you know, I certainly don't have personal issues with the officers in my community, but there is that growing up, I had somewhat of a weird disdain, and that must be really challenging. And I really wanted to tackle that idea of somebody that's doing the right thing, but is looked at on all sides as being an enemy. I thought that must be
a conundrum. Did you learn like anything about you know, about like that like black cop perspective from, you know, from putting this together?
Yeah, for sure. I basically there are times there when you know, he's at the camera doing a monologue and he's basically setting people straight, and that's him talking to me, really. So I learned a lot more about, that's what you do with films, is you try to give someone a voice that doesn't have one or doesn't seem to have one at times. So I learned a fair amount of that we're all kind of going through the same thing, you know, in our community and whatnot.
Yeah, and so like you talked about, you know, you just mentioned that you wanted to make it like the reversal, and like I mean, and for me that was one of, you know, that was like, you know, when, you know, watching that, it's like, okay, like I've experienced that, and it's nice to see. It's like I don't want people to go through that at all, but it's nice, but it's nice to see somebody else going through that, particularly someone who doesn't think that they deserve to go through that, because, you know, I don't deserve to go, you know, we don't deserve to go through that. But, you know, so, but like, you know, in the beginning of the film, like where it changes, you know, where he goes through that incident, you know, like where, you know, where he's out running and he gets profiled. Is that something that you put in like retroactively, or is that something that had always wanted to go into the film?
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. Yeah, that was, I knew that would sort of be the thing that would set him. At first I had him just kind of go off unexpectedly when the story was kind of wrapping up in my head, sort of out of the blue, but I felt it was really important to actually explore a different nuance of what it's like to be profiled. So in this case, it was the microaggression. And in this case, it's the idea that you could be profiled on the job. And that's a real thing that's happened to, you know, a fair number of officers. So yeah, I needed to put that in there, I think.
Yeah. And,
so, and it was early on.
Okay. So that came about early on. Like, is there you know, like, what are some of the messages that you'd like people to take away from this film, like from their perspective?
Well, I guess not so much messages as I hope it offers a new perspective to some people. It's kind of like going back to what you said. It was nice to see other people go through this. And it's true. We don't want anyone to go through this, but it's the idea that, wow, this is what it must seem like. And it's, to some people, it's horrifying, or it's absurd that would even happen. And it's like, yeah, it's absurd that it does happen. And it was kind of, you know, hopefully opening up a new perspective to keep the conversation going and not being in a conversation that's so reactionary and so silenced all the time. Like, we're always considered that we're just, you know, oh, you must have done something to provoke it, or there must be something wrong. It's just, you know, I don't think people really get a grip on how traumatic that could be when something seemingly so random is not really random at all. And you come to expect that you're going to get that type of treatment. And I sort of wanted people to understand that this is what it could be like. And it's as baffling to us and our community as it is to the people that they're seeing on screen that they relate to. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a really poignant point is that, you know, yeah, it's just as baffling as us, but it really happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so as a Canadian, was it difficult to, you know, I guess to make these, cause I'm American. So like my perspective is I'm from Washington, D.C. So that you know, these are the types of things that, you know, we've been talking about for a long time, but I don't know how it is in, you know, Halifax. Like, you know, how was it making it as a Canadian?
Oh, well, it's kind of oddly different, but universal. Things are approached that we have our issues. I guess they're different because our communities are somewhat smaller, but we've got, we've got pretty much, I mean, that happens, you know, we're pulled over, we're stopped, we're followed. We do studies and UN does studies, and all of a sudden, you know, they find it, you know, there's 40% more stoppages, 60% more stoppages to people of color. And, you know, sometimes there's the stigma of violence in our community that's completely overlooked by the stigma in, you know, amounts of domestic assaults and deaths in privileged community. But there's something of a cloud that constantly. I mean, I'm from a community that we had a sort of famous town, not town, our community called Africville, that was, you know, bulldozed by the city, and everyone was relocated, and that was just in the late 60s, early 70s. We're still dealing with them. We're still dealing with that, and you know, we're just getting land deeds because the city wouldn't give people who've had land for, you know, generations. They wouldn't allow them ownership. So it's different, but it's eerily similar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and yeah, it's kind of shitty anywhere you go.
yeah. No, that's, you know, that, like, that's the perspective. Because before I moved to Vancouver, I don't know if you know about Hogan's Alley, but it's pretty similar. You know,
yeah,
the community was bulldozed and a highway ran through. Like, there's no highways in Vancouver, and there's only one, and it went through Hogan's Alley. And
yeah,
and without giving away a little bit, too much in the movie, I thought there was one perspective, you know, particularly at the end where he's, he's talking about, you know, how he wants to be the first one on the call, and he's, you know, welcoming those nicknames. And like when you were putting that in the movie, like, can you tell me a little bit about like that perspective?
sure. I tend to do things like that in my films. I tend to have characters that, I sort of keep my movies inside the community, if you will, and I sort of like play with a lot of social and political power. And I figured that it's kind of an unspoken thing that I never realized until maybe I was about 22 or something, and I was working with the community, and I remember a lawyer just talking about, rushing to get all the cases. And, at first, I thought, you motherfucker. Oops, sorry. I started kind of without knowing, I started kind of understanding, especially when I started working with youth, and I was really, I started really thinking about that perspective. So that was important for me, because we do have officers that they're there first. And I started thinking about that sort of unspoken rule with some people, and that people will do that. That's your sacrifice. You're not going to be respected by the community, but you're also the person that's trying their hardest to protect it in some way, even if it's not seen the best way, or if it's seen as overly righteous or skewed in some ways. So that was that's actually how that first happened. And I'd written that lawyer character in a play years before with a similar perspective, which was, more pronounced, though, a little more vicious, actually.
That was like that for me, like, that was one of the lasting points that, I had never really thought about. But I want to thank you, thank you for joining the radio show. If you'd like to see the final screening of Black Cop here in Vancouver, it will be at the Rio Theater on Friday, October 13th. So thank you. If you have anything to say.
Oh, no, that's great. Thank you so much for having me. And the audiences have been really interesting out here. It's been great. So,
thank you. Are you going to be at the final screening?
I actually won't. I'll be Edmonton or Montreal.
Okay. Well,
sure.
Okay. Well, good luck. And thank you for joining the show.
Hey, thank you so much.
Bye. So that was the hour of Off the Beaten Path. I appreciate all the listeners all the time. We do this every Thursday from 7 to 8 every week. You all, next week we won't be here because I will be in Montreal. But tune in for the following week, or listen to a rerun of the show, or listen to this show again. You guys have a great week. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned for The Youth Element coming up next. Bye.
A podcast series by the Asia Pacific Foundation of Canada. You're currently listening to part one of a three-part special all about politics, and more specifically, political engagement among youth in East Asia.
When you graduate from high school, many of us continue on to university. You're kind of hit in the face by the real world. And this is when questions about the economy, society, and I guess life in general, really begin to sneak up on us. And I don't know about the rest of you, but at least for me at the time, I was like, wait, does this mean I have to be an adult soon? How do you even adult?
Ah, yes. Goodbye high school innocence, hello student loans, and all those other things like housing, job hunting, all that good stuff that we in North America are also very familiar with.
And love to complain about.
But across East Asia, these social and economic growing pains have turned into some tremendous student protests in recent years. And what's transpired is an unprecedented uptick in political engagement among youth across the region.
Right, so in this three-part special, we'll be covering some of the most recent social movements and examples of political engagement that suggest a shift in the mindset of youth across the region.
Many of our listeners have probably heard about one, or maybe even two, of these political events in East Asia. But how do we piece them together to form a bigger picture?
Well, to start, we'll contextualize